welcome to the Social Security Administration IT Transformation Industry Day conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Rajiv Mathur. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the quick intro, and good morning, private business leaders and public leaders and healthcare industry leaders, IT managers and program and project managers, solution architects, and all our Industry Day participants today. So welcome to Social Security's first virtual Transformation Industry Day. We hope you enjoy today's offerings. My name is Rajiv Mathur, and I'm the Chief Information Officer and the Deputy Commissioner for Systems at Social Security Administration. And I also want to introduce Sean Brun, the Chief Program Officer for IT Modernization. I want to thank you all for your interest and participation in today's event. We've had over 200 of you register for the event today, and we're very excited that we've had such a good turnout. Today, you'll hear from and learn about some of our modernization efforts from SSA's senior leadership. Before we move on into the program specifics, let me set the stage as follows. SSA has substantial obligations in providing service to the public. In a given year, we handle 36 million calls on our toll-free number, 42 million visits in our field offices, mail 278 million letters. We have 418 million web pages that are accessed. We operate two enterprise data centers, and the list goes on. To meet these continued service obligations, we must modernize our IT infrastructure, our data, our application interfaces that are used by our employees and our business partners, and, of course, the public. We published an IT modernization plan last fall that outlines how we will modernize. Let me talk about three ways that we think about modernization. IT modernization at SSA is meant to change the way that we do business. It's changing the way we build or buy software using principles that have worked well in industry. Concepts like having a customer experience orientation, which looks at the public experience as well as the employee experience. A product management orientation. Design thinking. Incorporating agile principles and DevOps principles, using data differently at the point of decision to improve quality, to improve our decision-making, modernizing our infrastructure, thinking about identity and authentication differently because that's a core part of how we default to digital. Modernization in a second way is also about people. In transforming the way that we do business, we're asking people to work differently and think about their work differently. This is a major effort for us, and it's something that we need to execute, and we do execute on a daily basis, is helping our people also modernize. And finally, we have a mission to deliver. I started off by talking about the way that we deliver services to the public and to our employees. And in our modernization plan that we published, there's a term in there about re-engineering the plane while it's in the air. That's a cliche, but it really means something to us because it means delivering on the mission while we're modernizing. We can't let either suffer. There's no hiccup, and there needs to be no hiccup in either. So we focus heavily every day on delivering that daily mission while we're also modernizing. So with that, I'd like to turn the program over to Sean Brun. Sean and I work very closely together across our entire senior leadership in transforming our use of technology to deliver services better. So with that, let me hand it off to Sean.
Rajiv, thank you, and good morning and welcome to everybody. Today's event is being conducted via a nationally moderated telephone conference call. All participant phone lines are automatically muted throughout the call. You will have an opportunity to ask questions for approximately 10 minutes after each speaker today. During the question and answer sessions of the event, I will provide instructions, and our operator, Todd, will unmute your line so that a participant can ask a question. Today's event is being recorded. Within the next few weeks, we'll be sharing the recording of the event and a summarized question and answer summarization of the questions and answers generated during the call. We did receive some of your questions ahead of time, and we'll do our best to answer those today as time permits. Our speakers today will be referencing the conference materials you received along with your dial-in information yesterday. We'll do our best at regular intervals to reference the slide number we're speaking from. IT modernization, as Rajiv said, is a multi-year agency initiative to modernize our technology and to modernize our business processes. We are currently executing the first year of our five-year plan. As you've probably read in our modernization plan that's posted to our agency website, we have six goals for our modernization effort. Goal number one, improve service to the public. Goal number two, increase the value of IT for our business components. Goal number three, improve IT workforce engagement. Goal number four, improve business workforce engagement. Goal number five, reduce IT and other operating costs. And the last goal, reduce risk to our continuity of operations. Our agenda today focuses on five areas of modernization: infrastructure and platform migration, the state of our authentication efforts, work management, electronic health records, workflow management, and business process management technology. Throughout the presentations, our presenters will mention potential procurement opportunities that may support our modernization efforts. In addition, at the end of the event, we'll be sharing information with you on the federal procurement process. I am now going to introduce our first presenter, John Forchbeck. He'll speak on infrastructure and platform migration. John is a senior advisor in our Office of Systems Operations and Hardware Engineering. John?
Thanks, Sean. Good morning, everyone. So I'm John Furchbeck. As Sean mentioned, I'm a senior advisor in the Office of System Operations and Hardware Engineering. Today, we're going to go through some of the things that we're looking at for modernization in the infrastructure and platform migration, give an overview of who OSOPE is, what our efforts are looking to achieve in infrastructure, and then go through four of the specific initiatives that we're undertaking in infrastructure with modernization. So we're going to, if we go on to slide five, we'll start with the OSOPE overview. Wanted to give you some basis of who we are in OSOPE. We're a component within the Office of Systems responsible for not only the operational support, but also the infrastructure at SSA, and we support all the field offices, payment centers, foreign offices across the country and around the world. We're led by Dave Thomas, our Associate Commissioner, and two Deputy Associate Commissioners, Yadish Katia and Kashira Lambert. We provide the building blocks of compute, storage, and network, along with telecommunications, to all of our customers, which include not only the American public and businesses, but also developers and users within SSA. We'll move on to slide six now. When we look at infrastructure, we want to provide the building blocks that will enable us to enhance the hardware, the applications that we're deploying, the data center, incorporate the cloud into the data center, improve our network, storage, process, governance, all the things that are necessary, including security that you'll hear about later on, that are necessary for us to be able to provide quality services to our customers. In order to be able to achieve this, we want to look to align our infrastructure with business needs. It's important that we understand what our business is doing and that the infrastructure responds to their needs. We want to provide flexible hardware options and automated software capabilities. So we want to give people options, not options to go anywhere, but a set of options that are available to them where they can host their applications in the best possible platform where they'll work as efficiently as possible and respond to the business needs. We want to present IT infrastructure as commodity that can be ordered, so that when our customers are looking, developers are looking to build applications, they can provision hardware, the compute, storage, and network as necessary. And then finally, we want to manage, if we're going to have multiple platforms, which we feel is necessary to accommodate our needs to meet customer requirements. We want to manage our infrastructure as a unified structure so that we can go one place and look at it. We'll move on to slide 7 now. As part of trying to achieve this, we've identified 4 objectives that will help us meet these goals. We want to automate tasks. Obviously, in order to be able to provide resources to our customers as commodities, we need to be able to automate so that they're consistent, reduce error, maintain a sustainable and supportable infrastructure. We want to abstract capability. What we mean by that is the customer shouldn't have to be concerned with where they're hosting their application. They should be able to say, I need a 3-tier system, or I need a web server, an application server, and a database server, and not be interested in necessarily where that's being hosted, what data center that's being hosted in. We want to adapt our processes that we currently have in place to move us forward to modernize. And then finally, we want to make sure that we're working with business all the time. So we want to ally with business to understand their needs and ensure that we have security infrastructure and policy in place to meet their needs. If we move on to slide 8. So what we've done here is we've begun to identify the 4 key areas that we're working on in infrastructure to modernize. Enabling DevOps, where we're going to shift left. By this, we mean doing our testing earlier in the life cycle so that we can automate releases going through the life cycle. Platform transition, again, give us the flexibility to be able to host applications where they are best suited to run. Back office modernization, email, Office 365, SharePoint, enterprise applications, look at leveraging software as a service to free our people up from supporting that infrastructure that's necessary to run those applications. And then finally, the agency cloud, where we're looking at not only a public cloud, but also an on-premise private cloud. So we're on slide 9 now. And what we're going to do now is step through each one of these areas in a little more detail, give you what the scope is and our current activities that we have ongoing. So the first one we're going to look at is enabling DevOps. Here, we're at the stage of identifying what our vision, strategy, and alternatives are. So we believe that DevOps will help us achieve our goals of modernizing not only the infrastructure, our application development, deployment, and release processes. We need to understand what we want to achieve out of that. What do we have in place now? What do we need to improve? What do we need to add to that to get to where we want to go to? We want to work together across technology and subject disciplines. Too many times in a lot of organizations we'll have silos. We want to begin to break down those silos and work together as much as possible so that we can facilitate a streamlined process. Obviously, the shift left concept has to validate and monitor controls earlier in the life cycle. This will enable us to release applications more quickly, which ties into the next point. And then we want to promote tools that facilitate collaboration and automated releases. The only way that we can get to this process of releasing things quicker is if we have a feedback loop and know what's going on and people we're transparent in what we're doing and our customers understand the entire process and know what's going on. And then we want to automate and consolidate processes. Again, this concept of automation is really a crucial piece of our modernization effort. We move on to slide 10. So some of the activities, so we're going to follow the same format for the next 3. We'll give you the scope and then the activities. Enabling DevOps, our current activities. We're evaluating the best practices and industry standards, evaluating software to improve workflow and visibility, and then looking at what we have in place now and what we need to do to improve that process to speed up software delivery. So we're on slide 11 now. We're moving on to the next initiative, which is the Agency Cloud Initiative. Our scope here is we're looking to extend our infrastructure with hybrid cloud technologies. This means that in addition to our standard, our legacy, our current infrastructure that we have in place, we're looking to add an on-premise cloud and an off-premise cloud. We currently have a presence off-premise. We're building an on-premise cloud. We're looking to provide support for software, platform, and infrastructure as a service. So we're not limiting ourselves to just infrastructure as a service. We want to leverage the cloud model as an IT services broker. So we want our customers to be able to come to us, and we help facilitate where they need to go and what they need to get to get the resources they need to accomplish their task. And then finally, we point out that we have we're looking to implement a cloud management platform. We are currently working to develop an RFI that we're targeting for the fourth quarter of FY2018. And at this present time, we're targeting an RFP for the second quarter of FY2019. So we can move on to slide 13. And this initiative, the platform transition, refers to we want to reduce our footprint on the mainframe where it makes sense. We want to be able to put applications in the appropriate location where they run the best. So as we mentioned, we're building an on-premise cloud. We have an off-premise cloud. We have distributed servers. So we want to be cloud smart. What that means is consider cloud first, but be aware of where things run the best. So just because we're considering cloud first doesn't mean that's where it goes. We want to make sure that we look holistically at applications and make the best determination for where they fit in our environment. We want to leverage platforms as a service because we believe that will help ease our potential movement of applications between platforms, so across clouds potentially. And then look at the technical feasibility of migrating the mainframe workloads to other platforms, cloud, and other platforms at the agency. So if we move on to slide 14, some of the current activities that we have in platform transition are a feasibility analysis to look at Content Manager and WebSphere, an IBM product, moving them on to x86 off of the mainframe. Establish a platform for testing these things, understanding what's involved in moving these applications off, what support is needed, how do we make it run, how do we make it secure and perform, conducting a proof of concept. And then we're also looking to pilot the document management architecture on a distributed platform. So we have a number of initiatives looking at the possibility of moving things from one platform to another. We're doing this so that we understand what's involved and ensure that we can give the performance and meet the requirements of our business community. So we can move on to slide 15. This is the back office modernization. So again, following the same model scope, and then we'll move into activities. Right now, so we're looking to move major elements of our back office to the cloud. Right now, that means Exchange, SharePoint, potentially Office 365 and other things that are used at the agency as part of our what we're calling back office collaborative tools. Moving those to a cloud provider, primarily software as a service, again, to free our folks up from not having to support the infrastructure so that they can do other tasks. All the other modernization efforts we need are obviously going to require people. We can free people here to move over and do support some of those other tasks. We're looking to transition support to cloud-based cloud service providers. And then we're also looking at strategies to centralize our field office. As I mentioned on the first slide, we're supporting field offices across the entire country. What can we do to possibly centralize our servers and consolidate servers to support our customers across the entire country. If we move on to slide 16, some of the current activities that we have in place in back office, we're planning, designing, and implementing the SharePoint and Exchange in the cloud. We're establishing secure connectivity to Azure. We obviously need to obtain an authority to operate and maintain that authority to operate, again, referring back to security. All throughout all our efforts in modernization, security is a prime concern, particularly when we're looking at different platforms and how we implement them. And then finally, we're eventually going to need to migrate to SharePoint sites and exchange accounts in phases from our current on-premise solution to our cloud-based SaaS solution. We're going to move on to slide 17 and try and give you a summary of what we talked about and then move on to the question phase. So in summary, I think the infrastructure modernization efforts are looking to provide the building blocks that are necessary for our customers to meet their business needs. We want to look to the future. Just as we all know, IT changes fairly rapidly. We need to be constantly looking forward. If we try and implement what's in place, what's hot today or what's at the forefront today, as we go forward, we're going to fall behind and not stay ahead. And we need to listen to our customers to figure out what they need, what we can do best to help them, along with security, legal, and acquisitions to ensure that we can do things in the best possible way and fastest way for our customers to modernize our infrastructure. And then finally, we want to partner with a whole, with businesses, with other agencies, with our customers to find the best solutions for SSA. That may mean tailoring what best practices are because of specific cases at SSA, processes that we need to do at SSA. That will conclude my presentation.
Thank you, John. And Todd, this is Sean. I'd like you to advise the participants how they may ask a question. And as questions queue up, I'm going to ask John to respond to one of the questions that came in advance of the call. So, Todd?
Sir. Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question.
Thank you, Todd. And as we wait for callers to queue, we'll say, John, what does our current data center modernization look like at SSA?
So currently we're doing a number of things in our data center. We obviously mentioned that we're building an on-premise cloud. We're looking to consolidate as much as possible our different management infrastructures that we have in the data center. We still have a mainframe presence, and that will continue. And as we go forward, the mix of workload across those three platforms may change as we determine the best platforms for where applications need to run. But our goal is to provide an infrastructure that's as flexible as possible to support wherever the business needs to go in order to meet their needs.
Excellent. Thank you, John. And Todd, do we have any calls?
Yes, sir. We do have one question. We'll now take our first question. Caller, please go ahead.
John, how are you? This is Mitch Mitchell with a team from Sciox Health with a quick question. Thank you for the brief today. And could you, I have two questions, actually. One centers on your ATO requirements and if you're going to be looking not just internally but externally with partners and having partners that may be linking to or leveraging SSA infrastructure also need to meet ATO requirements. Is it FedRAMP? And if so, is there a specific FedRAMP level of certification or accreditation that you're looking for partners to maintain as it relates to infrastructure? And then second, could you provide a little bit more insight into the document management architecture innovation that you're contemplating?
So thanks for the question, Mitch. Fortunately, we have the CISO here with us, and he's graciously willing to help answer your question on the ATO. And then we'll hop back to the DMA question.
So NIST and federal requirements, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. My name is Rob Collins. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer here at SSA. We have to follow pretty much all federal and NIST requirements. It relates to the data. rather than the systems that it, the data rides on. So wherever the data goes is where those ATO requirements essentially are going to be need to be met. And then the type of data is what determines what the level. I heard you talk about impact, low, medium, and high impact of the ATO. That's really driven by what the data is that's being transferred or processed over that system. And with FedRAMP, it's the concept of doing it once and using it multiple times. So anything that's outside of our environment that we're going to send data to does require that FedRAMP approval to go through the Joint Authorization Board or for an agency-sponsored FedRAMP package. Did that adequately answer your question?
Yes, it did, Rob. Thank you. Just one quick follow-up. What role is SSA going to play in sponsoring partners? Because I am familiar with the FedRAMP accreditation process and know there's a fairly significant backlog. Is SSA sponsoring systems today with a look toward the future in those requirements?
It's very limited due to resource requirements, so it would really depend on the solution and how important that solution is to meeting our mission.
Okay.
So it's independent.
And Mitch, I think you had a second part of your question on the document management architecture.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could provide a little more insight into DMA.
So I am far from the expert on the document management architecture. I don't know if there's anyone here that can address you, but we can certainly follow up with you and provide more information if necessary to the group.
We'll provide Mitch a summary in our written document summarizing the call in the Q&A section. We'll take a note to include information on the document management architecture basic description of our architecture.
Yeah, that would be helpful. I mean, you mentioned that you're looking to pilot a document management architecture, and our question really was around whether any of the contemplated RFIs that you've identified in the brief, how that intersects with what the document architecture pilot is contemplating, if there is a link at all, or if it's completely something separate.
So, Mitch, they're completely separate. The RFI that we were referring to was for a cloud management platform.
Okay. So if there are any future contemplated source of thought or RFI opportunities specifically regard to DMA, and some additional information on DMA would be helpful.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Todd, other callers?
Yes, sir. We'll now take our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Corky Ashford with Cloudera. I'd like to ask, is a big data platform in any of the planning that you're doing now for this infrastructure migration and upgrade?
Was your name Corky?
Yes.
Hey, this is John. So, yes, big data is part of our overall strategy as we go forward, and we're looking at that now.
Okay, because we're currently we do have a cluster up and running over with a gentleman named Ron Sykes and his group. I was just curious how it fits into the greater enterprise thinking and planning. Instead of being sort of a siloed endeavor at this point. So would you be the point of contact for future discussions around that, or is it a SOHI, or would it be a different group?
So it sounds like you already have contact with Ron Sykes. I would reach out to Ron, and he can reach out to the appropriate people. It is part of our longer-term roadmap, but if you reach out to Ron, he can reach out to the appropriate people in SOHI.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for answering that.
And Todd, any further questions on infrastructure and platform migration?
And at this time, we have no questions in the queue.
Great. Thank you, Todd, and thank you, John. And we're going to move on to our next presenter, our Chief Information Security Officer, Rob Collins, will speak to us about our State of Authentication. Rob?
All right, we're going to be on slide 20 for those of you following along at home. Good morning again. My name is Rob Collins. I'm happy to speak to you today about authentication here at SSA. I'm also the executive lead for the Office of Information Security, which includes our cybersecurity program. I'm actually surprised to be this early in the program. Usually security, you save us for last, and if we can fit it in. So excited to be here to talk about it. In the Office of Information Security, we protect the agency's information technology resources and data, manage risk, and enable the business mission. It is our mission to protect the data, enable the agency's business mission, assure the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of agency assets in securing the SSA enterprise. We deliver an all-inclusive program that combines people, process, policy, technology, and organizational structure to secure SSA data and IT resources. Our program is pretty comprehensive. It includes, but not limited to, perimeter security, network security, endpoint security, application, data, security, prevention, monitoring, and response. So it's pretty much all things cybersecurity. Safeguarding sensitive information has been an important issue since the creation of Social Security. We protect the personally identifiable information for approximately 325 million Americans. We have approximately 1,500 offices worldwide. We run about 1,250 applications across 25 major information systems and roughly 44.6 petabytes of storage. So lots of storage here. We manage more than 82,000 user accounts, encrypted laptops and mobile devices for 85,000 users. We secured 266,000 hardware assets connected to our network, and this includes more than 113,000 end-user devices and more than 4,700 mobile devices. So all this to say that we have a lot of data about every American, and cybersecurity is increasingly becoming more important and how that ties into authentication. So it's asset authentication is kind of under the Office of Information Security, and we're, again, excited to discuss it with industry. For background, we're going to level set where SSA has been and how we have evolved in the space, including a quick history. We're going to talk about looking forward and future opportunities that may exist. Slide 21. So starting at slide 21, this is just a background about the stages of authentication. And that first step of authentication is really our first interaction with a customer. We establish the user is who he or she claims to be in this identity proofing stage. Next, we bind a valid credential to the verified digital identity. And finally, we authorize the right user to access the right service at the right time. Slide 22, please. So this is the current state and timeline of our authentication services. We began these services in 2000 when we put paper forms online in electronic fillable format. We deployed our first version of iClaim, allowing users to file initial claims with SSA. And we expanded our services to include business and government services in the late 2000s. Facing budgetary concerns, we suspended paper mailings of the Social Security statement. However, our customers wanted or needed their Social Security statements for various reasons. So to fill that hole, we made a decision to provide this document electronically via new portal with a new authentication protocol. This led to the creation of the current My Social Security portal. So in May 2012, we deployed our new My Social Security portal for our citizen services with the statement as the featured service. In that first year, we processed approximately 3 million requests for statements. The number has grown every year since launch. And in FY17, we processed 46.2 million requests for the Social Security statement. In the next few years, we expanded our online services to include high-volume in-office services to kind of reduce that burden on those 1,500 offices worldwide. These include change of address, direct deposit, check your benefits, Medicare replacement card, 1099 and 1042, which allow users to get electronic copies of these forms, and the Social Security number replacement card. We have almost 37 million accounts through MySSA and have processed over 619 million electronic transactions from May 2012 to present. Slide 23. Slide 23. So this is the future state of authentication. As cyber threats change and emerge, SSA will need to make enhancements to our authentication ecosystem. We will continue to enhance our identity proofing process, increasing the depth and data validation sources, deploying solutions with a trusted referee scenario whereby a legal guardian power of attorney or some other trained or certified individual could vouch for or act on behalf of an applicant. So this really brings into play how we do authorization as well to make sure that the correct party essentially is vouching for a current customer. We will continue to expand our credential options to offer more options to our users. So we're looking to expand our ecosystem to allow our users to leverage their existing credentials if they meet our requirements. This could be through other federal partners as well, or even potentially the private sector. So we'll continue to expand our credential options. As we move forward, we will update and improve our authorization processes to ensure the right person is getting that right access to the right service at the right time. So all this is really a careful, orchestrated play of how we identify users of who they are, how we issue that credential, either being internally or from another partner, and then ensuring that they have the right access to that data at the right time, or potentially giving that trust to another user to act on their behalf in the trusted referee scenario. Slide 24. So future opportunities. This is the meat of what you all are here to get, right? We want your input on various areas, one being business processes. So in identity proofing, what is enough data to verify a user's identity? With regards to data, what data is out there for SSA to verify against? Are there standard models for privacy and/or user consent with regard to authenticated services? So, of course, we do follow NIST guidance, but there may be other guidance which would be a best practice that goes on top of NIST or is more thorough that we should be looking at. For technical process, the majority of our customers are not tech savvy, right? A lot of them are at retirement age, so whatever we choose to go with as a solution has to be more intuitive and easy to use and understand. So how do we leverage credentials that are easy to use? What are some authenticators that SSA can use with our customers to increase usability? In light of the plethora of data breaches, what should we be focusing on regarding behavioral or adaptive technologies? And what are other emerging technologies that SSA should consider? For third-party collaboration, BYOA, bring your own authenticator. What's the best approach to allowing your users to bring their own authenticators? A general concern amongst our users is we're making it too hard or we already have data on them. Where in fact, although we make first contact at birth with our users, we don't know a lot about them until they come back and apply for retirement benefits. So how do we gather that data and actually use it in a meaningful fashion? How can we decrease this gap from birth to retirement to stay more attuned to our users' needs? NIST recommended federal agencies explore federations in the new identity digital identity guidelines, which we have been exploring mostly from the federal side, but there may be more opportunity for private partnerships. So we're very interested to hear about that. And then how can we federate with the market as a whole? Thank you for the opportunity to present. I look forward to any discussion or feedback.
Great. And Todd, we're going to open the line for questions again. And as callers queue up, we did get two questions in advance for Rob. So, Todd, if you want to let callers know how to ask a question.
Yes, sir. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one at this time.
And Rob, one of the questions we received in advance, is SSA currently doing any type of behavioral, adaptive type of authentication?
So, yes, we do some type of authentication there. We collect data such as device information and IP address. However, we only use this on the back end. We're not using it in real time, which is something that I'd really like to start exploring. I think that's a lot more on the bleeding edge of these technologies and identity management.
Great. And the second question we received in advance, what has SSA done in the federation space?
So we're developing a shared federated identity management platform. We've been collaborating already with multiple external credential service providers, CSPs. We're working with login.gov. We're working with ID.me. We would be very interested in what other types of partnerships, public or private, we should be entertaining or bringing into this federated identity space.
Excellent. Thank you, Rob. And Todd, do we have any callers?
No, sir. We did not have any queue up this time.
All right. I'll pause just a minute. And
you sure? Nobody has any questions for me?
Everybody's got cybersecurity or authentication questions.
Again, it's star one to ask a question.
Well, thank you.
We did have one caller queue up.
There we go.
Brave individual.
Thank you.
Caller, please go ahead.
Rob, how are you? It's Mitch Mitchell from PsyOx Health again with the team here who just really want to know what keeps you up at night.
My 11-month-old daughter and 3-year-old daughter keep me up the majority of the night. No, it really is, you know, we store and process some of the most vital bits of information on the population as a whole. How do we ensure that we increase the usability to enable our mission, but really protect that data in a way that's meaningful? So not just checking the boxes, but how we're actually employing solutions that make our posture or security posture more secure.
All right,
thanks.
Good question.
Just wanted to keep it rolling.
Thanks, Mitch.
All right.
Thank you. No more questions at this time.
All right. Well, I think we will move then on. We're ahead of schedule, but, you know, never know if one of these topics might generate more questions, so we'll have time to answer more questions in the coming topics. But our third business requirement is on work management. And Wayne Lemon, our Acting Associate Commissioner for the Office of Software Engineering, Office of Benefit Information Systems, is going to give us an overview of our work management. Wayne?
Thank you, Sean. I would like to sort of begin the discussion, we can move past the initial slide, to sort of frame it in terms of several areas for the discussion today. Referencing in terms of the particular background, I want to provide some perspective in terms of work management, what it really means in terms of the agency's benefit processing applications. And then move to a more delineated discussion on the general direction in which we're actually headed, also some of the information regarding SSA's business, and then essentially the strategy, the current thinking that we have in terms of how we think we'll actually get there. Next slide. Slide 28. So as outlined in the actual IT modernization plan itself, there are several key tenets, and some of this was referenced earlier in the discussion. One of the things we look at most importantly is improving service to the public. One of the primary ways we can do this is by providing our employees or the knowledge worker with the modern software tools and experiences they need that will allow them to serve the public most productively. Additionally, one of the key areas we're focusing on is the notion of real-time processing. We'd like to actually focus in on providing the SSA knowledge worker with additional information and data for him or her to do their job, and this will actually allow us to actually provide real-time access to more information than we currently do today. Also, another key item associated with improving service to the public, becoming much more of a service-centric organization. Customer service is at the center of what we actually do. We want to make sure we remain focused on that as we continue to modernize. And also this notion of better customer experience. If we provide the SSA knowledge worker or technician with the tools and more modern software, we expect that will translate into, again, a better experience for the public. Other key tenets, increasing the value of IT for the business. This is really the foundation of what we're looking for in terms of work management and the benefits that we provide. This is a very important attribute. IT and data reliability. Data is essentially at the core of what we do. Many organizations, as you might suspect, understand and have interest in the value of SSA data which we use obviously to process our major workloads. Security, as my colleague mentioned earlier, Rob, security is essentially, you know, our middle name. It's part of the agency's brand and a key important aspect of our reputation. Therefore, as we're going through the process of modernizing and adding value to the business, we must remain focused not only on providing the access to the data to the SSA knowledge worker, but keeping it secure as well. And then the notion of faster claim and post-entitlement decisions. Providing modernization will give us the efficiencies we'd expect to help the SSA technician service the public, whether it be for an initial claim or any one of a multitude of events or transactions that occur after a person becomes entitled to SSA benefits. Next slide, please. Slide 29. Also, another important and critical aspect or tenet of the modernization plan in terms of work management comes under the notion of addressing technical debt. Essentially, the agency's modernization and the automation that we currently have in play and we expect to have in the future is a reflection of the legislation, regulations, and policies that we must follow. One important aspect for SSA is the notion that these legislative mandates, policies, and regulations have to be carried forward into any software that we actually modernize. They don't necessarily go away. So that is one complicating factor that we have to keep at the forefront of our minds. Updates to core systems. Our systems have served us well for decades. However, we need to modernize. Some of our systems have outlived their initial design specifications. Others have challenges in terms of work power and knowledge of individuals who knew how those systems were initially constructed and maintained over a period of years. So that leads us into the notion of risk and expense. Through normal processes, through attrition, employees moving on to other opportunities and such, we need to actually refresh the next generation of knowledge workers and technicians, as well as the individuals who support these systems, and the modernization we're undergoing will allow us to do that. Another very important aspect in terms of work management and the benefits that we provide to the American public references this idea and notion of balancing continuity with change. You may have heard originally at the outset of the discussion, and it's also highlighted as part of the IT modernization plan, that one of the key aspects that we have to approach the modernization with is, as an example, sort of switching out, you know, engines on an aircraft while it's aloft. That provides, as we said in the plan, a metaphor for what's involved and the criticality and complexity in and around modernization. We have to keep things operational while we modernize. To give you a picture of that, more specifically, you know, SSA services over 68 million beneficiaries and recipients. We have our Title II, which is Retirement Survivors and Insurance Program, disability as well under Title II, and essentially also under the benefits domain, the Supplemental Security System or income system. Together, we have approximately 68 million beneficiaries and recipients that we are supporting under the work management umbrella. in addition to actually doing the modernization, looking at new tools, new languages, approaching it from a perspective that is important to actually provide business value, we're also very much aware of the importance of actually addressing technical debt and also balancing continuity with change. Slide 30, please. Just a little bit more information about the business information for SSA. We relate this work management under the umbrella of, as I mentioned previously, the retirement survivors insurance program and also the supplemental security income program, which is a needs-based program. The core mission of the agency, to provide a metaphor, is like a large insurance company. All the tasks from claims intake to determining entitlement and eligibility, payments and accounting processing, major cyclical operations that deal with any upgrades for cost of living adjustments, benefit rate increase, and just the regular care and feeding for these production systems is at the core of the agency mission and also in terms of what we have in front of us to address in terms of modernization. It's a huge and significant undertaking. Next slide, please. One slide 31. In terms of where we're headed, part of what we're planning to do is look initially at our claims-taking process. How do we make it better? How do we modernize it? How do we improve it? How do we actually provide the business value that I referenced earlier? Our focus is on the SSA knowledge worker, which we then expect to translate into better public service. We are also looking at the notion of transitioning from older technology to newer technology as part of the modernization. And it's also important to reference the fact that this is a joint effort between the business side of SSA as well as the IT organization. Slide 32. One of the things that we have determined in terms of a best practice as well as a requisite for actually executing and moving out on IT modernization from a work management perspective, addressing the agency's critical core benefit programs, is the need to receive and acquire regular and consistent customer feedback and perspective. The way we're doing this, we began initially with something called customer discovery. And essentially, in layman's terms, it's a way for us to understand more directly what's possible. What does the user or what are the users asking for from us? We would then move from that particular stage into something called product discovery. That gets into some additional detail, which talks more about some of the capabilities and features that we're hearing are needed from the business. That process then moves us forward into identifying sort of technical user stories, and we move into more refinement to tasks that then lead us up to preparing to begin actual software development activities. So it's a journey, and we began and we continue to stay in lockstep with the customer through activities such as customer and product discovery. They're part of the team, as I mentioned earlier, joint effort with the business and IT. Also, as part of IT modernization and work management, we're looking at how we can appropriately incorporate various functions and features into our modernization plan as we move out, again, in year one. One of the key areas we're looking at in particular is, as we modernize, what other systems or processes might we actually retire? And that's an important aspect of modernization. It's two sides of the same coin, business value as well as IT modernization, developing new tools, software and systems, and also determining what might be retirable. So that, in a nutshell, represents some of the work management aspects of the IT modernization plan as it relates to work management and the agency's key benefit processing systems. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Wayne. And Todd, we're again going to open the line for questions. And as questions queue, I will pose one of the questions we received in advance to Wayne.
Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star one at this time.
And Wayne, participants in today's call in advance expressed an interest in knowing the proposed process for stakeholder engagement to facilitate the transformation. You mentioned our core benefits claims-taking processes. How will we engage stakeholders on our modernization?
Yes. I am the IT lead for the work management benefits domain. I have partners on the business side that I work with and communicate with regularly. We have consistent meetings on a recurring basis. We talk about the vision. We talk about the plan. We talk about product discovery, the outcome from that, as well as the notion that we need to work together regularly as it relates to moving out on modernization. So we were all involved consistently and regularly in the customer discovery and product discovery process, as I mentioned, and that's sort of a never-ending process. It's like a conveyor belt. As you go through product discovery and you get enough information in terms of capabilities and features, then you start to move forward with actually executing on any software development for those particular capabilities and features. So we regularly communicate with our business partners in this, not only through product discovery, but through regular discussions and meetings to maintain lockstep for the vision and moving forward.
And Wayne, I would add for our audience that as part of our development effort, particularly development efforts that relate to our public-facing software, generally our internet capabilities, we do have a user experience group within the agency that guides product teams through the discovery process, particularly for stakeholder engagement. That can include focus group activity. It can include and often does include user test of prototypes or preliminary versions of software and usability testing both on campus and remote. We have conducted this type of activity for several years. Internal to the agency, we do that with our technicians as we deploy software, and external to the agency, we can involve members of the public on a voluntary basis in both the focus group activity as well as the usability testing.
Yes, I totally agree. The usability testing and the user experience work that we do actually makes sure that the end user can maximize the use of any software we develop that they use in their job from a day-to-day basis. So it's a critical role that they fulfill in actually acquiring user feedback and making sure we're on target.
Thank you, Wayne. And Todd, we'll check to see if there's any questions from the callers.
Yes, sir. We'll now take our first question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for doing this. This is Suzanne Charleston for LexisNexis. I have a question about your goals in regards to interacting with your consumers and beneficiaries. the field office and the 800 numbers. We know that those numbers and the needs from those folks are increasing. Is your goal to increase, sustain, or decrease those customer interactions? Or what are your metrics and what are you targeting?
I think in terms of the 800 number and any other channels that we have, our end user is ultimately the SSA knowledge worker or technician. So in regard to what they actually need in terms of tools, technology, modernization from software perspective or end users, they are part and parcel of our plan to actually service. It's not just the field office technicians. It's individuals who also work 800 number as well. Part of this is going to be informed by some of the additional aspects that we use as part of product discovery. You may recall I mentioned that it's an ongoing process. So to begin, you know, we're looking at the claims intake process, but we have to get to some of the other areas in terms of channels that we actually provide service to the public. In terms of the actual metrics in and around that, that will come about, I think, as we go through the process, determining capabilities and features, and also determining what success should look like in terms of various metrics, in terms of efficiencies and how well they serve the public. Could be things in and around response times in that regard, but that is something we have to go through in terms of the actual product discovery in terms of the next phases.
And I would add to Wayne's response, and this is Sean Brown, the agency has an omni-channel approach. That's all of the above. In office, by phone, online, and new emerging support technologies like synchronous help for our online users. We envision that for the near term that we will have a business requirement to support all channels. The public is increasingly opting for self-service. And we want to meet their need for service. But as Rob Collins mentioned earlier, we serve all members of the public. It's a very diverse population. And as such, we continue to have an omni-channel approach to public service.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hello. This is Rob Polster of Polster Consulting. Thanks for your briefing, Wayne. An earlier IT mod business case that I came across indicated that there would be upcoming agile development projects associated with Title II, Title 16, disability, earnings, enumeration, perhaps others. Are those enhancements still planned, and how might we learn more about those plans?
Yes, I can speak to the sort of Title II and 16, because that's part of the work management domain per se. Yes, we're actually in the process of, you know, completing what we call product discovery, identifying more specifically the technical user stories and tasks that will lead us up into beginning actual development using agile teams and such. I think in terms of wanting to learn more about sort of what we're doing in that regard, you could begin, I think, with either Sean Broom as a point of contact, and then you'll probably contact me for any more additional detail or information you would like to know about what we're doing in terms of those particular agile teams and the like.
And I would add, this is Sean again, I would add that we do have agile software development underway across all six business domains, and that is going to continue for the duration of our five-year plan. And it's to target development for our future state that is supported by ongoing business process reengineering across those core business processes you just mentioned. Those domains that are mentioned in the IT mod plan are really the core business functions that the Social Security Administration must perform to administer the nation's social insurance program. So in response to your question, I would just say that we are in the process of agile development. That agile development is product oriented for multi-year delivery of products over the next 4 years related to our modernization effort. And those teams will continue. New teams will start. New products will begin in the coming years. But it's underway at present. Is that responsive to your question?
Yes. Yes, it did very much. I appreciate that. Have some ideas that can de-risk agile development that might interest you, and I'll be following up about that.
Thank you. Todd, other callers?
Yes, sir. We'll now take our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Jacqueline at Hollywood Salesforce, and I wanted to know if you could expand on your volume numbers as it relates to your omnichannel support, as it relates to supporting incoming claim inquiries, maybe volumes around calls versus volumes around email inquiries and such.
I don't have specific metrics on emails right now or actual calls. I think that's something we can probably provide to you as part of the follow-up. One of the things I will mention, though, is that in terms of volume of customer base, it's, you know, again, about 61 million beneficiaries in terms of SSA customers on the Title II side, retirement survivors, disability insurance, and about 8.1 million on the supplemental security income side in terms of beneficiaries. Obviously, that lends itself into the number of possible inquiries through email or phone calls, but I think in terms of specific numbers, emails and the like, we would follow up with you on that.
And Jacqueline, this is Sean. I would reference back to some of the statistics that Rajiv mentioned in his opening. Those beneficiaries and recipients are a portion of our customer base. We also serve non-beneficiaries who have inquiries about their earnings records and Social Security number. And we also serve business partners, wage reporters, and federal, state, and local entities that we exchange data with. But in a given year, we handle about 36 million calls on our national toll-free phone number. We have approximately 42 million visits to our field office, and we mail outbound 278 paper notices, letters. We, on an average year, have over 400 million visits to our website. Regarding your specific question on emails, I do not have data on that, but I would also state, and you know, our Chief Information Security Officer may want to expand, we have high attention towards protecting the personally identifiable information of the members of the public who depend on our services. As such, we don't disclose that information in unencrypted emails outbound. On occasion, we do receive inbound inquiries. If they're general in nature, they could be handled with a general response referring them to a pamphlet or a publication that's available. If they're specific in nature, they generally are not handled via an email communication channel.
They're sent to another channel.
Correct. They're referred either to a phone call or a field office appointment.
Great. Thank you very much.
That being said, I did also want to mention, and Rob alluded to, the My Social Security portal, which is the online storefront for our business is striving to have an authenticated use case for all of our customers. And within that portal, we do have a secure messaging capability that is growing in use, and Rob alluded to some of that use during his remarks. And Todd, any other questions?
Yes, sir. We do have one more at this time. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Mitch Mitchell again, Sciox Health. Wayne, thank you very much again for the brief. This is a question I think for you and maybe Sean as well. We have some questions around the agile development process, resources within SSA, sort of the order of magnitude of development, agile teams. That's the first question. The second question, kind of following that, is what's the decision process that SSA goes through in evaluating stakeholder requirements relative to a buy versus build solution? Looking out into the industry for COTS solutions or GOTS opportunities versus driving an internal agile development process. An external view could accelerate innovation. It could help to achieve some of the goals and objectives that you've identified around providing a better service experience, getting things out into production more rapidly, helping to address some of the issues that you've identified. Curious what your thoughts are on that.
Sure. With regard to your first question, IT modernization is an agency apex priority. As such, it has the attention and the required resourcing to associate with the development teams that we're sort of aggregating now. In terms of the individuals and such, we're looking at, you know, give or take, you know, 7 to 10 individuals per team or multiple teams. But part of this goes back to the notion of prioritization, and the agency obviously has a lot of work on its plate and other priorities, but as mentioned, it is IT modernization is an apex priority. Therefore, we're using that particular perspective to help provide the resources required for the actual effort and initiative, that being the modernization itself. With regarding to evaluating stakeholder requirements, buy versus build, that is one thing that we actually do consider an important aspect of modernization itself in terms of ferreting out any particular opportunities in and around buy versus build. One of the particular aspects we have to be careful of and that we're cognizant of is that going back to the notion of the work that we're actually modernizing is heavily based on legislative policy and regulation, and therefore our automation is often a reflection of that. So for any particular opportunities in and around products or services, they have to align accordingly and supporting the agency's mission in and around those legislative mandates, policies, and regulations. But we do have a conversation with the customer in and around their needs, and their needs often drive whether or not we pursue a buy versus build or look for other opportunities and IT modernization beyond doing in-house development.
Let me just add to that. This is Rajiv Mathur, CIO, and when we are looking at any investment of IT dollars and looking to do any sort of work, we have a bias and we have a policy that is cloud first and cost first. So whenever we're looking at what the solution might be for meeting either something for the public or something for an employee, whatever software is being considered, whatever capability is being considered, we have to look externally, and that's the policy that we have in the initial scoping out the project, the process, and the product. Secondly, you questioned about agile, and we have substantially increased our agile work over the last 2 years or so. We were just in the beginning stages, I'd say, in 16, where we had probably less than 10 teams that were working in Agile, and now we have well over 50 across 11 different products. So we have come a long way, and we continue to look at everything we're doing in a new light as we embark on modernization and even non-modernization work. Anything that we do has to be cloud-first, cost-first, and then, of course, can we do it using Agile versus Waterfall.
And, Mitch, this is Sean Bruin. Just one final addition to Rajiv and Wayne's comments. To operationalize, effectuate that cloud-first, COTS-first approach, our capital planning and investment control process, as required by federal guidance,
does include a product evaluation of all alternatives, build in-house, hybrid build buy from the commercial sector. That analysis is documented and reviewed by our agency investment review board at the approval stage and of any investment, and can be requested to be updated either by the CIO, the sponsoring organization, one of our business components, or myself at any interval within the project, so that as new capability comes to market, we could ask product teams to, you know, evaluate further what are the options to deploy to meet the business requirement.
That's very helpful, Sean. Thank you for that. I just had a quick follow-on question as well. You know, we've been supporting SSA as we value SSA as a strategic partner of ours and have done so for many years. We want to continue to innovate with you. Can you speak to the processes that you have in place today to support the evaluation of alternatives as new requirements come to light and your industry engagement? This is a great forum, and honestly, this is the first time I've participated in a forum like this with Social Security along with my team. Could you speak to kind of the forward-looking level of engagement that SSA will maintain with industry in support of the evaluation of alternatives around requirements as they mature, soliciting input from industry, given the cloud-first, COTS-first orientation that you guys have?
Sure. I'd like to weigh in. I know Rajiv has comments, and our acquisition official, Seth Binstock, may also have comments. First and foremost, we follow federal acquisition rules. And second, all teams, all products are encouraged to do vigorous market research. That's research that includes publicly available information. That's research that can include requests for information, a formal process, and that's research that can include industry days, topic or product specific, as well as program related, like today's industry day. We've done industry days in the past that have been physical meetings here on our campus in Woodlawn. This is the first time we've done one virtually by teleconference with a slide deck distributed in advance. It's part of our effort to, you know, explore all opportunities to engage the stakeholder community. In addition, as I mentioned on a prior response, our product planning beyond the procurement angle does include stakeholder engagement, which can be through structured interaction with members of the public, through focus group meetings, through discussion with specific constituencies that follow the Federal Advisory Council Act guidance. And all those things can inform our planning for executing a business requirement. Those are all public external facing activities. Rajiv?
Yeah, I was going to say that you've heard us use the word product today quite a bit, I hope. We are reorienting our approach to use product and product management in everything we do, our investments, our how we do our work, how we organize our work, and it goes hand in glove with Agile, of course, and these are tried and tested practices in industry, and it's something new for government, not project, but product. So when we look at any opportunity to for a capability, it has to fit into some sort of a product, and that product, the team is going to have to look externally, and Seth will certainly talk about how we engage in the early stages of the investment process. Sean mentioned we have our CIPIC guidelines, which are how we do our investments. We have a policy that the team has to look at alternatives outside and consider how they meet the product requirements that we're looking for. I mean, these are all new. When I mentioned in my opening remarks that we think of modernization in many different ways, and one of them is people, this is part of that.
in helping them to operate differently and looking at their work differently, and then delivering on a product in a product view, not in a project view, you know, or technology or systems view. This is all new stuff. It's important stuff. There's some stuff that we have to do. It's not going to be changing overnight. So there's stuff that we're putting in place in policy. There's things that we're doing working with business partners to make sure that we get the requirements right. And then, of course, on the acquisition side, making sure that we're engaging industry correctly. So with that, let me hand it off to Seth to comment on how we engage.
So this is Seth Binsock, and I'm the Associate Commissioner for Acquisition and Grants. And as Rajiv and Sean both mentioned, we do extensive market research. The acquisition team, which includes the contracting officer and the contracting officer's technical representative, are required to and do a review of all the products in a particular market space. As Rajiv said, the policy is cost first, or cloud first, cost first. And they're required to document their analysis and do extensive market research. Sean also mentioned the possibility of industry days. We have done that in the past for specific procurement actions. We will continue to do so depending on the particular acquisition. We're going to do those mostly in our larger acquisitions. It's not cost effective to put together a large industry day activity for a smaller acquisition, but for something with lots of industry attention and high dollar value and importance to the agency, we're going to do an industry day and get immediate input from the industry. What we normally do for your average procurement is an RFI, where we seek capability statements and we seek information from the industry on things that will help us develop our requirement. So a lot of the RFI process, the information submitted by you through that process, goes into developing the requirement.
And we're going to take the feedback from this session, this good feedback, thank you for the feedback, Mitchell, because if we can find a way to operationalize this and make it less of a lift every time, if we can do this in a way that's appropriate for the right business verticals or product verticals, it would be a nice way for us to engage if we could figure it out. So there's a lot of interest for us, of course, to engage industry, and I know there is on the industry side. So if we can figure out a way to scale this, we will.
Yeah. So Rajiv, this is Mitch again. And let me just give you some feedback and say that I think this forum is excellent. Not only is it economical for all of us on the phone, I've got a team here with me. This is a great industry exchange because we get to listen to other people's questions, those that are asking questions, and it's really valuable. So I would encourage you to use this as a model and to maintain an omni-channel approach to how you're communicating with industry. I know FBO is the vehicle that you guys use to communicate out, soliciting input, sources sought, and information. I think that's one of many that you could consider. We look forward to the rest of the brief, but this is a great forum, and I really appreciate you guys helping to facilitate it. So thank you.
Thank you for that feedback.
And Todd, before we move on to our next presenter, just check again if there are any questions in queue.
Yes, we did have one more queue up. Caller, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. This is Slava Katz from Impact International. Wayne, can you just confirm that the work management business requirement covers Title II and Title 16 exclusively?
Yes, those are the primary agency programs that are under the work management umbrella.
Great, thanks. And so the follow-up to that is, what would you say the unique challenges are of those business domains compared to the other areas as it relates to modernization?
That's a great question. I think there are immense. One of the key aspects, I think, relate to the complexity of the two programs by nature, again, going back to how they are legislatively constructed. And the automation and the modernization is, you know, a reflection of that complexity. You know, there are multiple ways to become entitled. There are computations that are very complex in nature that help determine, you know, a benefit payment amount. The systems themselves, again, have served us well. They've been refreshed in cases. However, in some other instances, they need to be obviously modernized to outlive their design. The other aspect of that, too, is, you know, again, balancing the continuity with the change because, you know, while we're modernizing, we have to continue to provide the critical services of the right payment to the right person at the right time and also modernize at the same time. So the unique challenges of the work management in that particular domain are, I think, a reflection of the complexity of the two programs in particular, which are then, you know, borne out through the automation. We have to account for everything that we do today, tomorrow, in modernization.
And this is Sean. I would just add to Wayne's response and to let the caller know. So our work management right now is hard-coded into roughly 24 million lines of COBOL programming language that has evolved over decades. It codifies and administers nearly eight decades of statutory, regulatory, program policy updates. Those happen at different frequencies, but policy updates happen pretty regularly. The automation enforces program rules. And the code, the COBOL code, has those program rules as well as work management, as well as decision support, all in the same code base, baked together. And so we have no alternate system to process this work. So any claim, any post-entitlement action for a beneficiary on the rolls right now, it goes through an MCS process, and data is pulled from many legacy applications. And in addition to our major work processing systems, the modernized claim system, MCS, and MISIX, the modernized supplemental security insurance claim system, on the Title II side alone, we have 128 supporting applications. So the ecosystem of software is rather substantial. The volume of transactions is rather substantial. And those supporting applications that I mentioned are written in multiple different programming languages in addition to COBOL. And so oftentimes, the data that is collected in one application is stored in a database that's accessed by a second, third, fourth application, and then years may go by before we, you know, access that data again for a business purpose, and it might be even a seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth different application, depending on the beneficiary circumstances. So when Wayne references the complexity, when we change workload management for our core systems, we have to evaluate and test how that change will impact the other software in our environment. And it is very much the case that changes on Title II programming systems may have impact on Title 16 and vice versa. And so while I mentioned just the 128 supporting applications for Title II, the software universe for our benefits workload is even broader than that. So I think that's where a lot of the complexity comes in that Wayne just mentioned. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, very much so. And so in terms of prioritization then, I mean, you have sort of your very broad business areas and business requirements, and then within each one you've got very complex requirements that need to be implemented. And so as it relates to work management, is there a process to sort of understand how to prioritize within, let's say, Title II, what to actually tackle initially and how to roll out some of these changes so that you don't disrupt the business?
Right. Our approach, and I'm going to ask Wayne to expand on this, but our approach right now is to take a comprehensive view of both Title II and Title 16 together. And that the way we're proceeding at present is business workflow oriented. So starting when a potential claimant calls or visits, working through that pre-claim, claim, adjudication, award, post-entitlement activity in that sequential order. That's our approach right now. We are, however, taking an enterprise architecture view as well to make sure that the underlying infrastructure is in place and modernized, as John mentioned, before the benefits systems will need to access that. And Wayne, you want to add on?
Just add on a little bit more. And you may recall at the very beginning we talked about the fact that, you know, with our modernization, it's two sides of the same coin. It's adding business value and also doing the act of modernizing software and our systems. You know, part of that modernization is informed by the business and the process in which they were identifying, you know, specific pain points and concerns they needed to have addressed, which helped influence sort of what we would tackle first. While also accounting for, you know, the mechanics of actually doing any sort of modernization, rollout, implementation. So the two sort of work hand in hand in terms of what does the business need and when, and then how we can deliver that accordingly.
Thank you very much.
Great questions, and Wayne, thanks for your explanation and overview. You got the prize so far for the most questions, so good presentation. And Todd, I think time-wise, we'll move on to the next presentation. Are there any callers in queue right now?
No, sir, not at this time.
Excellent. So we'll move on to our fourth business requirement, electronic health records. And Jude Soundarajan has just joined the agency as the Executive Director for Health Information Technology, and I'll ask Jude to give an overview of our program.
Great. Delighted to be here. Good morning. My name is G. Soundarajan, Executive Director of Health IT. I'm on slide 35. I'd like to go over the following. First, an overview of disability. Next, volumes and cost of acquisition of medical data. Our goals in disability and some of our challenges. And the possible innovative solutions we are looking for. Let's move to slide 36. Let's talk about the disability program in detail. Social Security is more than retirement. The Social Security Disability Insurance and Supplemental Security Income programs are the largest of several federal programs that provide assistance to people with disabilities. SSA is one of the largest consumers of medical records in the U.S. Each year, SSA requests between 15 and 20 million records to make determinations on over 4 million disability claims. Last fiscal year, we received over 16 million records, which consists of 666 million pages of medical documentation. SSA handles large volumes of medical information to support our disability programs. Each year, we process approximately more than 15 million requests of medical information from about 500,000 sources. That can include doctors, hospitals, healthcare providers, on almost 3 million initial disability applications. And 1 million additional disability decisions at other levels of appeal. While electronic health records make up a growing proportion of the medical records collected by SSA, more than half of the 60 million records we received last year were faxed or mailed. As our workloads increase and our workforce decreases through retirement, we are looking to leverage technology in all aspects of the disability process. We see health IT as a powerful driver to lower costs and to speed the disability process. One of the agency's key goals is to improve the timeliness and quality of the medical records used to evaluate disability claims. The faster SSA can receive complete high-quality medical data, the quicker a disability claim can be adjudicated. So let me quickly walk you through our disability programs and the determination process. I'm going to move to slide 37. So we administer two disability programs, Social Security Disability Insurance and Supplemental Security Income. Only individuals who have a disability that meets our medical criteria and who also meet certain non-medical criteria may qualify for benefits under either program. The first program is Social Security Disability Insurance, also known as SSDI. This pays benefits to the worker and certain members of their family if the worker is insured. Well, that means that they have paid into Social Security through taxes. The second program is Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, which pays benefits based on financial need. When someone applies for either SSDI or SSI, we collect medical and other information from the individual and make a determination based on both the non-medical program requirements and Social Security's definition of disability. When we approve a disability claim, it leads to monthly cash benefits and often health care coverage through Medicare for the SSDI program and Medicaid for the SSI program. So how do we define disability? The definition of disability under Social Security is different than other programs such as the VA. Unlike the VA, Social Security pays only for total disability. No benefits are payable for partial disability or for short-term disability. Now, the Social Security definition of disability, it is defined as the inability to perform substantial gainful activity, which that basically means work, due to a medical, determinable, physical, or mental impairment, which has lasted or is expected to last for at least 1 year or is expected to result in death. Now, let me give you some background on this disability determination process. Individuals can apply for disability through a variety of ways. They can do this in person at our field offices, through an advocate or representative by phone or over the internet. During the claims intake process, we collect a lot of information about the individual, including their demographics, allegations, which basically means what the reasons that they're unable to work, a list of treating sources, this is where they were treated and when and where, a list of their medications, a list of labs and procedures and the where's and why's and when these occurred, vocational and educational background, and their past work experience. Now, SSA, we are not a HIPAA-covered entity, but we're covered under the Privacy Act. We collect a signed patient authorization so that a healthcare provider can release information to us about the patient. We alert healthcare providers of a medical information request through a number of channels, and these include mail, fax, and secure file transfer. We receive medical info back over the same channels. And obviously we prefer medical electronic health records because it's a much quicker and cleaner process. Once we have the medical information, our disability examiners manually review the information and make a determination on the disability claim. Once we receive the medical information, we review the medical records as they are received. We manually identify information that might support the patient's disability claim. If information is insufficient or missing, we must recontact that provider. If new sources are discovered during the review of information, we contact those providers for those additional records. Now, if we're not able to obtain the information necessary to make a disability determination, we must follow up with a consultative exam. That's when a physician will perform a one-time examination to determine the claimant's functional capacity. If the information supports a disability claim and results in an approval, the individual is eligible for a monthly cash benefit. Approval for disability benefits can lead to public health care coverage through Medicare or Medicaid. Now, many of the processes we use are manual, such as faxes, which can take weeks or months as we wait for medical records. When we receive like an incomplete packet or the claimant doesn't have any sources for medical information, we need to order a consultative exam, and these exams can be very expensive, and this incurs more delays in the process. On average, initial disability claim on average takes about 90 days from an application to decision. Now, for an individual that has a chronic or terminal illness that prevents them from working, every day that passes with them getting benefits, it's really a burden to them. And these individuals, they will make getting health care for themselves a lower priority, which endangers their own life and the individuals of their family and livelihood of their family. Now, leveraging health IT, medical information delivered to us can be delivered to us almost instantaneously in standard formats, which we can consume right away and reduce the time to deliver those disability payments. Also leveraging health IT, this allows us to leverage business rules against information such as diagnostic codes, procedure codes, and we could use like the lab results and medications to identify information that could support a disability claim in a quicker manner. So having electronic health records, it really moves this process quicker. And instead of these 90 days, we've got it down to one day from getting the records and making a decision by the end of day. So it can really smooth and quicken the process by having electronic health records. Slide 38. Today, less than 10% of the medical records SSC receives are received in these standard electronic data formats. The rest of the documents are received in various image-based formats, such as paper and PDFs, and through methods such as mail, fax, or electronic transfer. Due to the high volume of disability claims received annually, and because of the high volume of medical records received in formats that are not easily analyzed, SSA has unfortunately accrued a backlog of 1.4 million disability claims. We are on the early stages of leveraging additional downstream technologies such as with these acquired medical records to extract additional key pertinent clinical information. We're using natural language processing and investigating machine learning to identify patterns of information key to decision-making and visualization capabilities to pull all this together to allow our disability examiner to make faster and more accurate decisions. We can move to slide 39. So where does industry fit in? SSA is looking to the industry to assist the agency in reaching its goal of improving service to the public through improving the quality and analysis of medical data received. SSA is seeking innovative solutions in the following areas. We can move to slide 40. We're looking for innovative solutions and approaches to increase the volume and speed in which we receive medical records in standard data formats. We're looking for assistance in ingesting high volumes of unstructured medical data, some of those faxes and PDFs that we receive. We want to convert those into machine-readable formats. We want to continue to leverage and look at new innovative solutions using natural language processing and artificial intelligence to analyze and summarize this medical data received and help our adjudicators come to equitable decisions. We are also looking at techniques to quickly separate routine cases in this disability backlog from the more complex cases, and so that we can focus on these routine cases and complete these determinations quickly. And we're also looking for other innovative solutions that we may not be aware of. We can move to slide 41. Now, SSA invites ideas for new techniques and technologies that could assist the agency in solving its medical records needs, and to enable more efficient and equitable determinations for disability claimants. So we're looking for all types of innovative solutions. And now I'd like to open up for questions.
Thank you, Jude. And Todd will take questions. And as we've done for each presenter, we have two questions that were submitted in advance for Jude. So, Todd?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1.
And as we wait for callers to queue, I will ask Jude, what data exchange platforms will be used for electronic health records, and will there be any interfaces for beneficiaries to view their records?
Right. So we're on a number of hubs like Sequoia, and they provide standard data formats for us to transfer data. Now, the second question about viewing records, the end user viewing the records, we don't have a facility to do that at this time, and that may be something we may be looking into in the future, but we don't have any facilities like that envisioned at this time.
Great. And, Jude, a second question that came in advance for your consideration is, what plans does SSA have to modernize national medical evidence collection at the enterprise level? Will SSA drive a national medical evidence collection program? If so, how, and how will it develop requirements?
Right. So there's a number of national hubs. One example is the Sequoia Hub, which provides like national standards for medical records and electronic health records. There's also protocols like HL7 and me personally, I like to encourage the consumerization of health data. So the consumer owns their own health data. I think that's one thing that we can push out and work and strive for. And as part of that initiative, I'm going to launch a GitHub site with the standards that SSA requires for our healthcare records and the additional standards that we have above these HL7 requirements. I also have, who just joined us, is Sean Fry, who's our disability expert. Sean, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I just wanted to say we're utilizing standards. We're working with ONC and our other federal partners to really drive interoperability across the nation. We see this move to data environment as an opportunity not only for our agency, but all the federal agencies to be able to consume this data as they need to, and beyond the federal agencies, even down to the private sector. Why we have HL7 standards in health IT in general, just to really make that transfer of information a lot smoother in between those entities. And so the work that we're doing, you know, with the Hill, with the Office of the National Coordinator, with the private partners that we're working with the large EHRs that we've also been working with to share our needs, we believe this will help grow the exchanges that are out there and help America become interoperable with each other.
I'd like to add, as I say, we're very much encouraging national standards, and we're adhering to all the main standards in the EHR domain.
Great. So, Todd, do we have any calls lined up?
Yes, sir. We'll now take our first question. Caller, please go ahead.
Yes, this is John. I have you mentioned the HL7 protocol. Is this something that you guys are actually actively collecting a lot of data? And two other protocols that are very important in the medical industry are DICOM for medical images and also the ICA protocol to actually view, you know, remote apps. Are these two other protocols that you guys are using in your environment?
So we use HL7 extensively when we collect electronic health records, so that's a standard that we strongly adhere to. DICOM and ICA, I'm not familiar with that, and I'll do some more research. Sean, do you know if we're using that at all?
Those are mostly for, like, image, you know, reviewing images, where since we don't have an electronic health record, we consume it in HL7 form, but we are working with our partners how we can consume the images piece and some of the standards that are being adopted now through the HL7 protocol, you know, will allow us to look currently right now at the images as unstructured data. But adopting some of those other platforms that are out there are things that we're looking at and researching, determine how that, you know, is it valuable for us to look at an image, or really, and typically as an agency, what we're more interested in is the interpretation of that image. So we're looking really what's important for us, where the value is, and if those standards, along with some of the new things that are coming out like FHIR and direct-to-consumer exchange, how those would benefit us.
Okay, who would be the best?
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I mean, who would be the best person to reach out to if we had technology around monitoring and extracting data out of HL7? Who would be the best person to reach out to for that?
So this is Seth Binstock. Probably the first person to start with is me, and my address is Seth, SETH.Binstock, BINSTOCK, at SSA.gov.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you. We do have another question. Caller, please go ahead.
Jude, good afternoon. This is Mitch Mitchell again with Sciox Health. And I've got a couple of questions, actually, from my team, who once again have been supporting SSA for a number of years and trying to solve this problem and helping you guys work through this. So first question, with regard to the $200 million spend for information that you reference in the brief, do you have any line of sight or can you provide any additional granularity on, in addition to that spend or that cost, the other costs associated with managing the backlog and processing these requests so that you can begin to quantify what the value proposition would be to SSA in solving this problem?
So we're looking into that. So we've actually spent more than it's about $500 million. We look at our total medical acquisition cost. So $200 million is, I think you're referring to just the disability generally acquisition cost.
Yeah. So to answer your question, as far as the cost to obtain evidence, you know, you're also talking about what are we spending to acquire evidence, not only as just in the format that, is sent to us from vendors like hospitals and clinics, but I think you're also asking what do we spend on those consultative exams, what are we spending on consumables for paper requesting, what are we spending to, scan that in, and what are we spending on personnel. We're probably spending, a lot of this is intermixed, so we haven't broken it down specifically as a business process, what we spend for folks that are out in the field just that are part of requesting because they do other business, jobs in the DDSs, our folks out on the front line. But I would assume that, you could say that we're somewhere near about $500 million, just what we're spending to acquire evidence and pay for folks to obtain that evidence. And that includes consultative exams.
Yeah, so those are aggregate costs, actually. So the exams, when we don't get medical records and we have to send a disability claimant to a examiner, those can really drive our costs. We're paying for that medical exam, too.
Follow-up to that, just roughly, what percentage of the claimants that require additional evidence require an exam? Do you know?
About 27%. So it really does cost.
Yeah. That's significant. So once again, so I'm clear. So the inability to determine a disability benefit through medical evidence gathered in the form of medical records, 20% of the time require the claimant to submit to a physical to determine or confirm the disability.
Yes, that's approximately right. We don't have granularity on that figure, but it's around 20%. So when we're forced, we don't have any records, there's non-responsive healthcare providers, we're forced to send that individual to a medical examination, and that's a huge cost driver for us. So it's very beneficial for us to be on these HL7 standards and to receive electronic health records because it speeds the process and lowers the cost to the taxpayer.
Okay. All right. Second question that we have with regard to the backlog of approximately 1.4 million disability claims, can you provide any additional granularity on the circumstances that are driving that backlog? Is it solely a result of insufficient evidence? Is it largely due to the inability to access discrete data? Because of the nature in which it's coming to you, fax, paper, et cetera. Could you characterize that in a little bit more detail?
This is Sean. So that refers directly to the claims that are pending decision by an administrative law judge at our hearings and appeals level. And we've actually made some progress there this year, and we're around below 1 million pending now. So, it relates to not merely the evidence acquisition, but it also relates to volume of receipts as well as capacity on hand to conduct hearings and write decisions.
of having updated evidence helps to process hearings more timely. And our evidence acquisition strategy, our health IT records acquisition, is part of that business process enhancement that we're making. Last thing I would comment before turning it over to Jude for additional comments is it is certainly possible for a claimant who had been denied at an initial claim level to have new evidence by the time they get to a hearing level. So we're confident that we have all the necessary information to adjudicate a claim at the initial claim level, but then if a claimant elects to file for reconsideration or subsequently for an appeal, there's time that passes to allow for due process, and, you know, the fastest the process can run is roughly, you know, about 9 to 12 months.
Because we're a year program, sometimes people come to us early on in a disability, and we just need time to prove out that your disability is going to last 12 months. So some of that is just programmatic, that they get pushed through the channels. Other is what Jude had brought up and what Sean brought up, is that a lack of evidence becomes more robust downstream. And so time is just really needs to be there for these claims to mature, for somebody to be able to make a determination on that.
But, Mitch, the answer to your question is the access to current electronic health records is one of multiple drivers for that backlog.
Understood.
Yeah, so as we increase the amount of electronic health records, we move from our 7 to 10% that we get now, it's going to speed that process. Obviously, getting these records takes time. That can increase the backlog. So that's our focus, is to make sure that we get, and our drive is to make sure we get more electronic health records.
There's one other element that I'd like to point out to Rajiv Mather, which is there's getting the record in machine-readable format, which is important. And so that, you know, that format, making sure that it's usable downstream in our processing. There's also the quality of the content. And so meaningful use is meaningful use, but it needs to be meaningful use for us to say, and that may be different. So
yeah,
it's important to note that, and I think that's an important requirement. In addition to the format, how do we define quality? How do we define the content? How do we assess it kind of on an operational basis? These are all really important, tough questions that need to be automated.
Yeah, no, we recognize that absolutely, that what might be sufficient to meet a meaningful use requirement in the form of a standard transaction set may be grossly inefficient or insufficient for an administrative law judge to make a timely decision on a disability claim. You guys are doing some innovative work utilizing things like natural language processing and AI to try and abstract relevant clinical data out of unstructured data. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what kind of results you've seen through that effort and what you envision going forward?
Yeah, so I'm going to turn this to Sean, who's worked more closely with that team. Can you talk a little bit more?
Yeah, for our currently, what we're doing with the HL7 standards, we've created business rules based on our listing requirements, and these listing requirements are available to the public. They basically tell you what our program needs to be able to consider you disabled, and we have these broken across various body systems, but it'll tell you as far as if you have cancer, what type of metastases needs to occur for our program to consider you disabled. So we built business rules, which is kind of using the old way of doing things, but basically looking at ICD-9 and ICD-10 codes to lay out where, you know, an alert and examiner that there might be a possible allowance. Currently, we are undertaking a process where we're looking at, as Jude said, through NLP and even AI, as we receive this as data, can we look at the actual words? Can we look at the terms? Can we look at the way that they're applied in a, you know, structure of a sentence or the meaning, you know, within a, you know, a summary or a discharge summary? And can we apply that and look longitudinally and apply that again to our listing levels and also some of these other program requirements that we have for what we know about a person, their age, the past work experience. And so preliminary, we're just at the stages where we're dipping our toes into that. But we've been able to define a lot of the terms so we can now search across the information very quickly, which is a tool that's being tested out right now with the examiners.
Yeah, we don't have data yet to share in terms of efficacy, but there's two pieces of this. There's, does the technology work? Like, does it actually make sense? And then there's, how do you insert it into the business process? Two different things and two different steps, still early in our approach.
Okay. That's very helpful. Thank you. Can I just ask you to clarify one thing? You mentioned that these HL7 business rules are available. Can you just provide a little more context on that, where specifically?
Yeah, what I meant is our business rules aren't necessarily available, but what we've done is we've applied them against our listing, our disability listing impairments, which are available.
I actually have a couple more questions. I hope you don't mind. This might be a question for Seth. With regard to solving some of these larger business problems in partnership with industry, and how you actually execute on engaging with industry to implement solutions. You mentioned a couple of metrics that you're tracking: the backlog, the cost, the speed with which these claims are being processed to get to an endpoint, which is the determination of a disability benefit. These are the metrics that you're tracking. Has SSA ever, or would SSA consider, entering into a shared risk model with a business partner where performance would translate into some type of a contract structure, I guess is the question. But I guess it's a shared risk acquisition model where a business partner could solve that problem. I don't know if you understand the question, Seth.
I think you're asking a share in savings kind of contract. Where the vendor's pay is related to how much SSA saves in its program activity.
Or some sort of a performance-based contract. I know that there's a structure there. I don't know if SSA has ever taken advantage of something like that.
We have not, but we would consider it in a specific circumstance. So if the right circumstance came up, we'd certainly consider it as part of our procurement model. We know how to do it. We just haven't had an opportunity yet to do it.
Would you consider this to be the kind of use case that might warrant that?
That's something that we'd have to talk about with our program people, particularly Jude. So, yeah, I'm not in a position right now to say, because we haven't really discussed it.
Okay. If you wouldn't mind just taking that away as a question for follow-up afterwards, that you're welcome to publish along with the rest of the questions, that'd be great.
Okay.
All right. The last question we had had to do with where does this business problem around sort of the ingestion and acquisition of clinical information intersect with DCPS? And do you guys have any insights into DCPS relative to the IT modernization efforts that this overall call is discussing? But it hasn't been mentioned.
I'll jump in here and two items. One, just for our audience, we have less than 5 minutes left on this topic, so I want to make sure if there's any other callers in queue, they get a chance as well. And the Health Information Technology Acquisition of Electronic Medical Records that Jude described is an enterprise-level effort. It applies to all levels of adjudication, initial reconsideration, hearing, and appeal. And so I think as Sean Fry spoke, what we're interested in is getting as much electronic evidence up front as early in the business process as possible and running automated intelligence against that, in order to provide decision support to our adjudicators from the initial claim level all the way through hearings and appeals.
Did that answer your question?
In the interest of letting other people go, I'm going to say yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Mitch.
Okay.
And Todd, we have time for one more question on this topic if any callers are acute.
Yes, we did have one more caller. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. This is Corky again with Cloudera. Just a question on regarding slide 40 and your challenges around the ingest and processing and making structured and unstructured data available to your upstream application. Are there any RFIs planned or engagements with industry on talking around and presenting potential platform solutions for this challenge?
Yes, there is a RFI that will be coming out shortly focused on this issue on ingestion of unstructured and structured data and our needs around unstructured data.
So your question steals some of my thunder, which was going to be my almost very last point, which is that RFI for healthcare records should be coming out, as you said, in the very near future, probably within the week.
Great question,
okay.
Corky.
You're a mind reader, I think. It's great.
Yeah, clairvoyance. That's also part of our capability.
All right.
We'll be sure and put that on the RFI.
Humor, too. I think we'll move forward to our fifth business requirement, and that's on workflow management and business process management technology. And Jian Wang, our chief engineer for IT modernization, is going to present that topic. And Jian, take it away.
All right. Good morning. This is Jian Wang. I'm the chief engineer for IT modernization at FFA. You know, as Rajiv and Sean mentioned earlier, the IT modernization is not just simply convert those legacy applications in COBOL into modern, programming language. We want to change the way we meet business requirements. We want to change the way we doing the IT. So the my topic here is the how to leverage the modern standards, modern technologies to speed up and to dramatically increase the productivity, of IT to meet the business requirements. So on slide 43, I'm moving to the slide 45. So I'd like to share with you, what we mean by workflow. So I quote the definition from Wikipedia about the what we mean by workflow. So I won't read it. I won't, read the deck. You can read yourself. And slide 46. And it's what we mean by workflow management system. It's a piece of software for setting up, performing, and monitoring of a defined sequence of processes and tasks with the broad goals of increasing productivity, reducing costs, becoming more agile, and improving information exchange within the organization. And we also need the software to be able to exchange interface with other applications, either within organization or outside of organization. And slide 47. The benefit of the workflow management system and pretty much come from the four areas. One is increase our productivity, by automating some of the manual or semi-manual processes, and also, be able to streamline some of the processes through the automation, and also give us a faster and more accurate, way to manage the workflow and increase the visibility. So it can allow people to easily to check the status and see where we are in each of the flows. And also a complete overview of the workflow, so from management perspective and from statistic perspective. Next slide. And this slide is about the business process management and all understanding. And I quoted this from Wikipedia as well. So I won't read, and pretty much I want to emphasize the three areas and about business process management. Okay, slide 49. I'd like to mention at least these two industrial standards. One is the BPMN, the Business Process Model and Notation, and the other one is the DMN, Decision Model and Notation. And both of them come from the OMG. And actually, there is another standard is probably also in our scope. It's called the CMMN, the Case Management Model and Notation, and that's also highly related to our business. And I like to mention the three things we want, why we want to leverage the BPMN and DMN. And number one, we want to standardize the way we describe business processes and business logics. And, you know, even the BPMN, DMN is still in the process to be mature, but it's we feel it's the right direction, and it starts to get, you know, attention in the private, both in the private industry and also in the federal agencies. And the second area is we want to fill up the gap between the IT and the business in terms of the communication. When we talk about, you know, the business logic, the business processes, we're using the same way, the same standard way to describe things. And we want to, standardize and streamline our business flows, and we like to use a standard rule language to describe some of the decision making process used in SSA's business. And we also try to achieve, you know, what you see is what you get, and that means the whatever model we come up with, the BPMN, DMN, we want them to be executable and produce exactly the same result as the model on paper. Next slide. Slide 50. And why SSA needs work management software and the BP business process model software? SSC, if you're from the type of business, you can assume SSC is the biggest insurance company, at least in the country. So we are doing similar business as any other insurance company does. We have a wide range of workflow and business processes, and ranging from simple document circulating and the send-off process to a complex, you know, like a benefit claim process, disability determination, process, you know, all kinds of these, business processes. And SSA wants to standardize the workflow and the business processes through two kind of, assume, technologies. And one is, I say standardized no coding, and it's a turnkey system. We install it, we can use it, and especially for simple application. And the second type is maybe need some coding, and we like to low code and follow the industry standard, especially follow the BPMN, DMN standard. and which allow us to describe more complex business processes and workflows. Slide 51. What SSA needs. So these are the brief list of things we're looking for. You know, we actually have a duplicate slide of slide 53, and that's actually give a detailed you know things we are looking for. So I will jump to that 53 first. Yeah, we look workflow management. And we look business process management. We look for BPMN, DMN, you know, probably I need to add another one, the CMM and tools to help us to model, you know, our business processes. And the solution can be, as I mentioned, in one of the two categories. One is no code and turnkey system. And we install it and configure it, and then we can use it in, you know, especially for those small workflow tasks. And the second is, you know, low code and the customizable solution for large scale and complex, you know, business processes. And the list and the next bullet point is the list of features we are looking for, such as the web-based interface, you know, graphic process modeling tools, and the form designer. By form designer, we mean, for example, you can easily drag through the drag and drop design HTML pages. You can design XML, you know, form or JSON form, you know, whatever. So that's what we mean by form designer. And also third-party integration, right? And SSE has a lot of both internal and external data stores and the subsystems. You know, each of the business process needs to interact with those external, internal data sources and also applications. So the solution should have the capability for us to easily you know, integrate with those external, internal sources. And it should have automatic notifications, reporting, role-based access control, runtime platform engine, and also it has to be 508 compliant. And this is the list, but this is not the complete list, and this is our initial list of the requirement we are looking for. So next slide is, let's go back to the slide 52. These are the potential use cases at SSA. Okay, this is just a sample list, and such as the benefit claim processes, including Title II, Title 16, Title 18, disability, overpayment, and debt management, appeals, earnings, corrections, notices, you know, these are all the long list. You know, we have many areas we feel we can use workflow management software and business process modeling software to increase our pace to modernize the IT infrastructure. So I end up here and I'm open for questions.
Thanks, Gian. And Todd will queue up any questions for Gian on the workflow management, business process management technology.
Yes, sir. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one at this time.
And as we wait for callers to queue, Gian, we did get a question in advance. And can you share any information about procurement vehicles that you anticipate using to support IT modernization initiatives? I'm sorry. That was for Seth. John, your question was, please discuss the role of open source software in our modernization.
Yeah. We follow OMB recommendation, you know, on the both the, you know, cards.
versus customer build versus leverage, you know, existing components, as Rajiv and Sean mentioned, our policy on the cost. And also the open source is really, you know, all, when we do a customer build, we highly promote go with open source, and that's not just, you know, tools. It's really promote the common best practices, you know, in all IT modernization. So, for example, in the workflow and BPM area, we had a proof of concept last year on GBPM software, which is, you know, managed by Red Hat. And this year, we're doing another POC using Komunda. That's another open source for BPMN, DMN, CMMN, you know, tools. And we'll continue. We're also trying to do some proof of concept with CAS product on the workflow management and the BPMN area. So in parallel, we explore all possibilities.
Thanks, John. Todd, did we have any questions?
Yes, sir. We do have one question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, John. This is Rob Polster from Polster Consulting. I'm wondering whether Social Security is still planning to develop a new consolidated enterprise database, and what, if anything, is currently being done with that, and what the next steps might be.
Okay, good question. I won't call it consolidated database. We do have a strong, we call it a data strategy. For example, we created, we call it EDA, Enterprise Data Warehouse. We put most of majority of major data in a data warehouse, and on you know, we use the MPP platform, the massive parallel processing platform, to allow us to do extensive, you know, data analysis, you know, data exchange, and all kinds of reporting. So we do have a strategy on that. And also, as part of the IT modernization, we actually very successful migrate a lot of legacy data from IBM proprietary, like QSAM, you know, VSAM, into our relational database, you know, DB2 or any other, like Oracle, other commercial or relational database systems. Sean, do you have any update on this sort of here?
No, I think you covered.
All right.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Yeah, my understanding was that the enterprise data warehouse was going to be for legacy data, but the consolidated enterprise database that was originally discussed was going to be for ongoing current needs. Is EDW going to be used for current needs?
EDW is more serve as the data warehouse. Or the heavy lifting, you know, kind of thing. We do have a transactional database, which is running on the IBM mainframe on DB2, because the transactional processing is, you know, requires different features on the database than the analysis, you know, reporting, data exchange. So they are on different, you know, platforms.
And I would just add that the Enterprise Data Warehouse, provisioning data primarily for business intelligence management information purposes, is still ongoing, and we're adding more data sets into that EDW, and that our data strategy has evolved a little bit, and we'll include a little bit of information in that on the Q&A summary that goes out with this call.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And at this time, we currently have no questions in queue.
All right. Well, we're going to finish on schedule then, I guess, because we're going to hand it over to Seth Bitstock Engineer, Associate Commissioner for Acquisitions and Grants. You've heard from Seth before, and you've heard that we're going to ask him to answer a question about can you share information about our procurement vehicles that we anticipate using to support IT modernization. So, Seth, I think you probably have a lot of the information our callers are interested in.
Good afternoon. As Sean said, my name is Seth Binstock, and I'm the Associate Commissioner for Acquisition and Grants. And that title means that I'm responsible for managing all of FSA's procurement actions. And I wanted to talk to you today for a few minutes about marketing your company to FSA. The first part is context. The second part describes why trying to obtain one-on-one meetings with FSA executives is probably not the best use of your time. And the third part describes the best ways to get your company's products and services in front of the FSA decision makers. First, the FSA contracting decision makers are probably not who you might think they are. I'm not in a position to know how other agencies do things, but at FSA, very, very few executives have any contracting authority. That is, at FSA, the only executives with the authority to enter into or modify contracts or create binding obligations are the commissioner, the deputy commissioner for BFM, myself, and my deputy. Moreover, at FSA, we rarely, if ever, use formal source selection procedures. The formal source selection procedures involve appointing a source selection authority and a source selection advisory board. Again, we don't do that very much at FSA. It's probably been more than 10 years since the last time we did that. At FSA, the source selection authority rests with the individual contracting officer, and mostly these people are the GS 13 and 14 contract specialists who work in the Office of Acquisition and Grants. The contract award process at FSA involves a technical evaluation team, which is invariably staff from the requiring component, who they rate the vendor's technical proposal, and a contracting officer who evaluates the business proposal and makes the award following the source selection criteria established in the RFP. If there is a price technical trade-off to be made, the contracting officer is the one who does that trade-off. Now I want to talk to you a bit about why spending a lot of time trying to get one-on-one meetings with FSA executives is not a good use of your time. Notwithstanding the fact that the executives have no procurement authority and play almost no role in any FSA procurement processes, the executives are still bound by the ethics and procurement regs, and they have regular and extensive training about those regulations. They have been taught that they can meet with contractors as part of market research, and market research primarily is a listening-only process. They have been specifically told over and over by me and the ethics attorneys here at FSA that during market research, they are not to reveal anything about FSA's procurement plans unless that information is going to be made publicly available, and they can never make any promises or commitments. Another thing they are told is that they must treat all prospective contractors the same way. If you agree to meet with one prospective contractor, you must agree to accept meetings from any other prospective contractor that requests your time. Note that I'm talking about prospective contractors and not current contractors, because they can meet with current contractors at any time to discuss performance issues. So what do you get when you meet with an FSA executive in a one-on-one meeting? You're meeting with somebody who's going to play very little role in any upcoming procurements. You're meeting with somebody who's not going to give you much, if any, information. You're meeting with somebody who's essentially just listening. They're not going to draft the statement of work, although they might give overall direction and guidance to the staff who write the statement of work. They're not going to evaluate proposals. They're going to play no role whatsoever in selecting the successful vendor. I should note that all of this is intentional on our part. We have made a conscious choice to avoid having FSA executives caught up in the procurement and bid protest processes. So with that explanation as background, how should you market your company to FSA? First, I encourage you to go to the Office of Acquisition and Grants website, which is www.fsa.gov/OAG. This website includes very helpful information, and this is slide 56 that I'm on now. This website includes very helpful information about doing business with FSA, such as how to submit your capability statement to our vendor repository. The vendor repository is an internal agency SharePoint site that our contracting officers and contracting officer representatives use to conduct market research. and that is www.ffa.gov/oag/vendor-repository. The OAG website also includes information about recent contracting activity, and if you want, you can just click on the FOIA tab, and you will be able to search by contractor name, contract number, and even by the award description. The search will provide the contractor's name, contract number, description, award type, such as delivery order, purchase order, blanket purchase agreement, call order, or contract. It includes the award date, the obligated amount, and the completion date. You can also go to the OSDBU webpage, and OSDBU is Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization. You can go to their webpage from the OAG page to find our information, such as our contracting forecast, the subcontracting directory, and information about how to sign up for the OSDBU's monthly vendor outreach session. Wayne McDonald, who is our agency's Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization Director, holds free monthly vendor outreach sessions the third Wednesday of each month. If you haven't done so in your small business, I would encourage you to sign up to attend. Our website also describes the unsolicited proposal process. And quickly, let me describe what makes an unsolicited proposal valid. A valid unsolicited proposal must be something that's innovative and unique, independently originated and developed by the offeror, be prepared without government supervision, endorsement, direction, or direct government involvement, include sufficient detail to allow SSA to decide that support could be worthwhile and the proposed work could benefit an agency's research and development or other mission responsibilities. And it can't be an advanced proposal for a known requirement that can be acquired by competitive methods. And it can't be addressing a previously published agency requirement. There is another way, a good way to get your company in front of SSA. Act as a subcontractor on one of our existing contract vehicles. For support services, we have two vehicles, the ITSSC, which stands for Information Technology Support Services Contract, and the small business version of ITSSC, which we call BITSE. It's a small business ITSSC, and it will soon be called ESBITS. If you can partner with one of the contractor holders, you can gain SSA experience and past performance, which will help you in obtaining future SSA contracts. As mentioned before, one of the questions I received was a request to share information about the procurement vehicles we will use to support IT modernization initiatives. As you probably know, one of the administration's priorities is category management, one element of which is reducing the number of duplicative contract vehicles. In fact, I'm the accountable officer for category management, and my job is to make sure that if there is a best-in-class or existing contract vehicle, we use that vehicle rather than creating a new one. So to the extent that I can answer this question, it depends upon the specific requirement. If the requirement is primarily a hardware or software buy, we will use GSA schedules or NASA SUIT or one of the other existing contracting vehicles. If the requirement is IT support services, we are most likely to use one of our existing vehicles, either ITSSC or ESBITS, which, again, is the small business version of ITSSC. If it is a new product, we will look at the market and make a decision about how to conduct the procurement at the point when the requirements are defined. To the people who asked about set-asides, the answer is, I don't know yet. If we are not going to use an existing vehicle, we will look at the market before we make any set-aside decisions. And, again, that's when the requirements are fixed. Lastly, I do want to leave you with some specific upcoming IT procurement activities that you may be interested in. As we discussed before, an RFI for healthcare records should be coming out in the very near future, probably this week. The ESBITS requirement, the ESBITS RFP, which is the Small Business Support Services Contract, will be released toward the end of July or the beginning of August. With that, I thank you for your attention and ready for questions if anybody has any.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Take our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Seth, hey, it's Mitch again from PsyOx Health. I just want to say on behalf of my team here at PsyOx, I want to thank you guys for hosting this this industry event. It's been extremely informative, and we really appreciate the economic value of just jumping on the phone as opposed to putting people on airplanes. Well, it's great to see everybody. This has been, from our perspective, a very valuable exercise, so thank you.
You're welcome, and we hear your feedback, and to the extent that we can do industry days by teleconference in the future, you know, when it's appropriate, we will do that. Any other questions?
Thank you. At this time, speakers, we have no questions.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate you coordinating our conference call today. I'd like to thank all of our participants and presenters. It's been an informative learning experience for us to share this information with you in this telephonic environment. Appreciate your feedback. We will follow up from today's conference call with two items. I think very soon you'll receive a thank you for participating email, and within a couple of weeks we'll get to you a summary of the call with the information that was covered in the Q&A session. And with that, I think we'll wrap up the day and enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.